Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Rice and Evans Say Education System Needs Fixing by Ruth Campbell. Midland. The greatest risk this country faces is not China, Russia, or North Korea. It's the state of the education system in this country. Former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and former U.S. Secretary of Commerce Don Evans discussed the matter during a fireside chat Friday at the Petroleum Club in Midland. The event was organized by the Permian Strategic Partnership. About 200 people, from educators to legislators and business people and community leaders, attended. PSP CEO Tracy Bentley made the introductions. Rice and Evans discussed the importance of all students and families across the region and nation having access to the highest quality public education possible, Bentley said. Since 2019, the PSP, along with many of you in this room, have committed over $80 million in education initiatives, ranging everywhere from school leadership development programs, STEM centers for every elementary school across the Permian energy-specific curriculum, national board certification for our teachers, the expansion of public charter schools, and the expansion of career technical education centers, Bentley said. After 5 years of this, we are excited about the progress we have made, but we know, however, that there's so much more to be done. At an event they attended together in 2017, Rice was asked about the biggest risk the U.S. faced. Evans said people were expecting Rice to say China, North Korea, or Russia, but she said it was the education system. Evans said Rice was 100% right, and he would never forget that. That is one of the reasons I've gotten so involved in it myself. I start seeing how dire we are in the education system in America with respect to the rest of the world. We've got to get after it. We've got to fix this, Evans said. Rice, who is the Tad and Diane Taub Director and Thomas and Barbara Stevenson Senior Fellow on Public Policy at the Hoover Institution, said her mother was a school teacher and her father was a high school counselor, Presbyterian minister, and football coach. They understood that even in segregated Birmingham, Alabama, where I was a little girl, if you were educated, then that was something they couldn't take away from you. So this devotion to education was just kind of built into me from a very early age, Rice said. She added that she knows how hard being an educator is, but there is nothing more important than the education of our kids. There are a couple of reasons for that. One, there's our international competitiveness. The competitiveness of the economy, the competitiveness of our military. We face a situation right now where only about 33% of the people who take a test for admission to the military can pass it. And that's because we have so many people who cannot pass for all kinds of social reasons, but also that's really a disaster for a country like ours, Rice said. She added that it's not just about economic competitiveness. It's also about who we are. The United States is not a country in which we are bound by ethnicity or nationality or religion. We are bound by an idea, and that idea is you can come from humble circumstances and do great things. It doesn't matter where you came from. It matters where you're going. Now, the only way that that's true is if you have access to a high-quality education. It's the very fabric of our country that is at stake. If there are children who can't read by third grade, they're not going to read, Rice said. In fourth grade reading, Evans said Texas ranks 35th and in 8th grade reading, 45th. According to research, the Permian Basin is going to need 250,000 people. If you look at it, so the state of Texas is 35th, 45th, and if you look at this region here, we're region 18, and we've got 20 regions. In reading, we're dead last, Evans said. He added that PSP has invested in teachers and career and technical education centers in Hobbs, New Mexico, and Odessa. Evans said PSP has a campaign in New Mexico called the Student Success Network, which is going to be run like a political campaign with billboards and TV ads. We're going to get the message out to everybody. We're going to have billboards out there. We're going to have a billboard that says, do you know in your community that 80% of the kids in the fourth grade can't read at grade level? That ought to call somebody to say, whoa, wait a minute, that's not any good, Evans said. There is also a campaign being organized in the Permian Basin called Future Ready. Evans said competition has helped lift the education system in South Texas to number one from dead last. They've brought in some charter schools. Everybody brings their game, and now they're first. This is South Texas, where 90% of the kids are the underserved. You can do it if you get focused on it, and that's exactly what we intend to do. We're going to bring it in. We're going to bring in competition. We're going to measure, he said. In the Permian Basin, 23% of the seats are high quality. In the state of Texas, it's 75%. A high quality seat is a seat in a school that is an A or a B school. If you're in a school that is a C or below, you're not sitting in a high quality seat, Evans said. He said they are going to invest in a plan to turn things around. The members of PSP understand accountability and delivery. The commitment is real, and what pleases me is all these companies 3 years ago said we've got to go big, Evans said. He hopes if Rice comes back in 5 years, she'll see some progress. Asked about the impact of abolishing the U.S. Department of Education, Rice said she is an advocate for having a range of choices for parents. In circumstances where educational savings accounts or vouchers or charter schools are available, I think it's good for parents to be able to avail themselves of that. I think one of our problems right now is if you go to certain communities, the houses are expensive and the schools are good, and people want to know, can I get my kid into a good school? We really do have to make it possible for parents to have those choices, Rice said. I think we ought to be open to that. I hope that states will continue to open those possibilities, but it's also the case that even if we had the full range of school choice options, most kids are still going to be in public schools. We can't use school choice as an alternative to the public schools. We might be able to use it as a bridge. We might be able to use it for parents who are in circumstances where the schools are just not good, and they're not going to wait 5 years until those schools are better because they will have already lost their own child, Rice said. In a Hoover Institution report, they found that even if you had the full range of school choice, 60 to 65% of students would still attend public schools. One of my concerns is we shouldn't consider them as somehow enemies of one another, Rice said. They're all part of a larger picture of how to educate our children. Sometimes when I hear people like me who are school choice advocates, it sounds a little bit like, well, public schools have failed, and therefore we're going to do school choice. That's not going to work. We're going to have to work on the public schools as well, Rice said.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram's oil report for Saturday, November 16th. Coterra acquires Permian Basin assets for $3.95 billion. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. After combining Cabot Oil and Gas and Cimarex Energy into Coterra Energy, the company watched the upstream mergers and acquisitions market from the sidelines. Now it has entered the fray, acquiring Permian Basin assets from Franklin Mountain Energy and Avant Natural Resources in separate agreements totaling $3.95 billion. Closing is expected in the first quarter of 2025. The acquisitions add an oil-weighted focus area in New Mexico for Coterra, with acreage adjacent to its existing acreage. They will core up position in the northern Delaware Basin with 49,000 net highly contiguous acres concentrated in Lee County. The assets to be acquired include 400 to 550 net Permian locations, increasing net locations by 75% and Permian net locations by 25%, primarily targeting Bone Spring, Harkey, Avalon, and the emerging oily Lower Wolfcamp Penn Shale. Coterra is also gaining approximately 125 miles of pipeline and other infrastructure. Andrew Dittmar, principal analyst at Enverus Intelligence Research, told the reported Telegram that Franklin Mountain and Avant are two of the top remaining private company acquisition targets left in an increasingly consolidated Permian Basin, and potentially one of the last chances in this consolidation cycle for Coterra to materially increase its Delaware footprint outside of public company corporate M&A. Coterra already had a substantial runway of Delaware Basin inventory, with more than a decade of total inventory, Dittmar said. However, he added, quote, "In the scramble for dwindling high-quality resource, it is important for companies to continue to build scale when they can find a deal that fits all acquisition criteria. By combining these two companies into concurrently announced deals, Coterra was able to maintain its inventory duration in the Delaware, keep quality consistent, and improve its free cash flow profile," end quote. The assets are also a strong strategic fit for Coterra, given the company's legacy acreage position in the New Mexico portion of the Delaware Basin, he said. The optionality between crude oil and natural gas remains a key selling point for Coterra, as it is fairly unique among independent producers in being able to shift capital based on relative pricing. Its gas exposure stands to benefit the company, as natural gas prices are poised to rally in 2025 on the back of ramping U.S. liquefied natural gas exports and increasing data center demand, according to Dittmar. Texas Pacific Land Corporation expands with $286 million acquisition. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Texas Pacific Land Corporation is continuing its growth strategy, making its third acquisitions of minerals and royalty interest this year. This most recent acquisition is focused on the Midland Basin, comprised of approximately 7,490 net royalty acres, primarily in Martin, Midland, and other counties. Over 80% of the interest being acquired are adjacent to or overlap existing Texas Pacific acreage. The cost was $286 million in cash. Quote, "This is portfolio diversification," said Lawrence Lebanowski, vice president of mergers and acquisitions at the company. Continuing the quote, "We see opportunities not just in the Delaware Basin, where we have a large portfolio, but in the Midland Basin as well. This acquisition gives us balance between both basins," end quote. The new assets are also under what he called top operators like ExxonMobil and Diamondback Energy, which together operate about 66% of the acreage. The acquired assets have current production of approximately 1,300 barrels of oil equivalent per day, 78% liquids. It also gives Texas Pacific, quote, a clear line of sight, end quote, to the development plans and capital expenditure plans of the operators it works with, Lapinowski said. Brandon Boyd, vice president of corporate strategy, noted there are more drilling rigs in the New Mexico side of the Delaware Basin, and the company has historically had more interest in the Texas side of the Delaware. Quote, that's why we're looking at diversification, Boyd said. What's interesting is that there is more activity in different counties in the Midland Basin, Boyd said. Lapinowski said the company is always open to acquisition opportunities, but also looks to grow organically. The company's Texas Pacific Water Resources, for example, has achieved incredible growth with its work sourcing water for sale and treating water on its acreage. Quote, water is a real differentiator for us, not just minerals, Lapinowski said. Lapinowski sees the next phase of growth for the company having multiple legs. Quote, Texas Pacific has multiple long-lived high-margin revenue streams across oil and gas royalties, source water sales, produced water royalties, and other revenue generated from our ownership of surface. Each of these revenue streams are underpinned by a clear line of sight to near and longer-term value creation for our company as we enter the next chapter of growth, he said. Infinity Water Solutions unveils financing model for water sustainability projects. The story was written by Mela McEwen, oil editor. Companies are working hard to build projects to store, treat, and recycle produced water. But finding the funds for those projects can be a significant challenge. Infinity Water Solutions believes it has an answer, publishing its Blue Circular Economy Financing Framework, a blue financing model dedicated to environmental impact, sustainability, and the preservation of water. Quote, this becomes a framework for any project of this type globally, Michael Dyson, Infinity Chief Executive Officer, told the Reporter Telegram. He acknowledged there was a bit of self-interest for Infinity, but said the framework is the first blue bond that will include the energy sector. All others had excluded the sector, he said. The idea of sustainability and business success are not mutually exclusive, Dyson said. The energy sector can be and must be a critical part of these solutions. He called the framework meticulously put together with a range of stakeholders, including in New Mexico, where Infinity has operations. The framework was structured with guidance from Wells Fargo. Dyson said a bank like Wells Fargo has the financial tools available to have a meaningful impact was needed. Moody's evaluated it for public second-party opinion. Quote, all we can do is submit the project and answer questions. The project is or it isn't aligned with sustainability goals. Moody's agreed we were aligned, Dyson said. He recounted participating in a panel discussion and being asked how to get water projects funded. Quote, I said, you have to make it sexy. You have to make it relevant. You have to speak their language, he recalled. That included describing the return on investments, how it can add value for operators from both a capital expenditure aspect and achieving their sustainability goals. For states, it's how the projects can diversify economies, create jobs, attract new businesses, preserve fresh water, and reduce the risk of seismicity. What Dyson also finds exciting is that, quote, This water industry, this nascent growing industry, with the conversations people are having, they're aligning, and that's wonderful. That moves us forward. End quote. Circular economies are essential in addressing global resource scarcity, with water among the most critical resources at risk. Infinity transforms waste streams into valuable resources, creating fit-for-purpose water products that are recycled, reused, and kept in continuous circulation. This closed-loop approach is not only unique to Infinity, but also groundbreaking within the industry, delivering enduring environmental, economic, and social benefits that help ensure water remains accessible for communities, ecosystems, and industries alike. Quote, I look forward to seeing how people tweak the framework for their own purposes, Dyson said. Small oil producers join blockchain for energy. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Efforts to mitigate or eliminate methane emissions from oil and gas operations is spreading from the large producers down to the smaller mom-and-pop operators. One way of facilitating that spread is Blockchain for Energy, a consortium helping drive digital transformation in the industry. Among its members are Chevron, ConocoPhillips, Devon Energy, ExxonMobil, Chesapeake, Repsol, and SLB, and Innovate AI. Among its offerings is B4E Carbon, an emissions management platform to track emissions. Among the newest producers to collaborate with the consortium is Last Mile Production, which is using B4E Carbon in its West Texas operations. Zach Ward, owner of Last Mile, told a reporter Telegram that when he formed Last Mile, he saw the opportunity, regardless of one's opinion about the energy industry or the environment, to act responsibly. Quote, every landowner should want his resources used properly, he said, adding that joining Blockchain for Energy was a way to demonstrate that not only can producers operate responsibly, but that they should. The consortium, quote, can bring in a new wave of oil and gas ownership passed down to groups like me that lean on technology, lean on artificial intelligence to make better decisions, better utilization of resources, he said. Ward describes his company as a retirement plan for legacy oil fields. Buying legacy fields from companies like Chevron or ExxonMobil, who want to focus on unconventional plays, and developing the last resources from them. Capturing those emissions and selling that natural gas is not only doing the right thing, but increases revenues. That financial reward removes some of the opposition to emissions reductions, Ward said. Of the consortium, Camilo Mejia, founder, chairman, and chief executive officer of Innovate AI, said, quote, this is a more efficient way to work together, end quote. He noted that there is a significant gap, approximately 800%, between the emissions reported by companies and what the government measures, and digital technology can close that gap. Quote, the goal is to get the technology to the companies without the people or the time, he said. Through digital technology, the smaller companies have access to real-time data, said Rebecca Hoffman, chief executive officer of Blockchain for Energy. She added, there are incentives to establish standards around tracking emissions, something the industry is driving. Quote, we feel we're just scratching the surface, she said. We know there's a lot of technology coming at us, and we're trying to drive that technology, allow it to help us, end quote.
Breast cancer screening saves lives. Dear Mayo Clinic, I'm about to turn 40, and I'm nervous about getting my first mammogram. I hear they can be uncomfortable or even painful. Is breast cancer screening really that important? Answer. It can be a bit daunting at first, but breast cancer screening helps people live longer. Screening can catch cancer early, either in the precancerous stage or when it's localized to a very small part of the body. When we catch it early and decrease the risk of it coming back in the future, patients not only live longer, but they also may live with fewer symptoms or concerns. A common misconception around screening is, quote, I don't have a family history of breast cancer, so I don't know that I need a mammogram, end quote. That's concerning because we know 1 in 8 women get breast cancer. It's critical that, no matter what your history is, you still consider breast cancer screening for the future. We recommend that breast cancer screening start at age 40, although these decisions should be individualized. Some patients may need screening earlier based on family history, personal history, or genetic predisposition. It's not one size fits all, and it's good to decide with a primary care clinician, depending on your specific risk. For example, if there are any hints of a strong breast cancer history in the family, we may consider genetic testing. Traditionally, breast cancer screening is with a 3D mammogram. With breast self-exams, we recommend patients get to know their breasts or, if they've had a mastectomy, their chest wall, and notice if there are any changes, such as any new lumps or bumps, and then bring that to their healthcare team's attention. It's not uncommon to have breast changes over time. This can happen due to menstrual cycles or hormonal changes. But if you feel a lump that does not go away or worsens over a matter of weeks, that's a reason to get examined. Other things to look out for include flattening of the nipple, nipple discharge, or a hard lump in the underarm. We eliminate many early-stage breast cancers with a combination of surgery, radiation, and medications. Most breast cancers are very treatable and curable. With breast cancers that are detected at a later stage, there are still ways that we can suppress these cancers to help people live longer with fewer symptoms. The question of how frequently someone needs to be screened comes up a lot. Our general guidance is annual screening with mammograms or 3D mammograms. For patients with a very high risk for breast cancer, extremely dense breasts, 3D mammogram. We might recommend additional or supplemental screening, often with an MRI or an MBI, molecular breast imaging. It really depends on risk. We have patients who strongly prefer or request to have screening less often. Overall, the most important parts of this process are discussing screening with your primary healthcare clinician and sharing decision-making. Midland Health. Jordan Juarez wins DAISY Award for Nursing Excellence. Midland Health is thrilled to announce that Jordan Juarez, RN, a dedicated nurse in the critical care unit, has been awarded the prestigious DAISY Award for Extraordinary Nurses. This honor highlights Jordan's exceptional dedication and unwavering compassion in patient care, embodying the core values of Midland Health. For almost 75 years, Midland Health has delivered exceptional healthcare services to Midland County and the surrounding region. Our commitment to delivering quality care is reflected in our staff, volunteers, facilities, and comprehensive services. The DAISY Award, established by the DAISY Foundation in memory of J. Patrick Barnes, recognizes nurses who consistently go above and beyond in their roles. To date, Midland Health has proudly awarded this honor to over 145 exceptional nurses. Jordan's recognition is marked by a heartfelt testimonial from a family she cared for, which speaks volumes about her impact and dedication. Quote, she was the best, knowing everything before walking in. She always had that positive attitude and smile, even when we received the darkest news. She cared for my son and all of my family as if we were her own, end quote. Midland Health is proud to support and participate in a global initiative like the DAISY Award, which acknowledges the vital contributions of nurses and healthcare professionals worldwide. This award reinforces our commitment to compassionate, patient-centered care and emphasizes the exceptional service our healthcare team provides daily. Please join us in congratulating Jordan Juarez on this well-deserved recognition and celebrating all our nurses' continuous pursuit of excellence in patient care. Lifestyle. Standing desk not the healthy alternative many think it is. Standing desks became popular thanks to phrases like, quote, sitting is the new smoking, end quote, which highlighted the dangers of a sedentary lifestyle. A new study, however, has found standing desks might do more harm than good, not improving heart health but actually leading to circulation problems. The study focused on 83,000 people who wore devices to track their sitting, standing, and other physical activity over nearly 7 years. Researchers found sitting for more than 10 hours a day was associated with a higher risk of heart disease. Simply standing did not mitigate this risk, however. Standing for extended periods was instead found to increase the risk of circulatory problems, such as blood pooling in the legs, which could lead to varicose veins. If left untreated, varicose veins can lead to bleeding, ulcers, or other complications, according to Johns Hopkins Medicine. How can I mitigate the effects of sitting? So, a standing desk may not be the solution to reverse a sedentary lifestyle. There are other things you can do, however. According to CNN, taking short walks throughout the day is a smart way to interrupt periods of inactivity. Stretching and other light exercises are key as well. If you still want to stand part of the day, consider getting an adjustable desk, which can be a good way to stretch and get small amounts of activity without the negative effects of constant standing or standing. This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, November 20th, 2024. Is slow strength training a fountain of youth? Some 90-year-olds say yes. Los Angeles. Delois Alcorn is 92 years old and pressing nearly three times that in weight at the gym. On a recent Wednesday afternoon, Alcorn, dressed in a t-shirt that read, "Be strong, be resilient, be you," slid into the leg press machine, which was set at a whopping 312 pounds. He gripped the handlebars, closed his eyes, and, quote, "got zen," end quote, as he says. Then he pressed his legs forward very slowly. Quote, "slower, slower, smooth," end quote, urged his trainer standing by his side. The retired aerospace engineer who lives in Sierra Madre did about four reps before his teeth clenched, his legs trembled, and he let out short puffs of air through pursed lips. The exercise was just 1 minute and 33 seconds long. When it was over, Alcorn sprung to his feet, beaming triumphantly. Quote, "I used to do 400 pounds, end quote, he boasted. Quote, "but the COVID, it put me back. I'm working my way back," end quote. Alcorn was in the midst of his weekly workout at the Strength Shop in Echo Park, where he and his wife, Patricia Alcorn, 88, have been training for 12 years. They're devotees of an exercise called slow motion strength training, often referred to as super slow or power of 10. The resistance training technique involves lifting weights very slowly and methodically, with 10 seconds each spent on the lifting and lowering motions of the exercise. Doing so eliminates momentum and is therefore easier on the joints and connective tissue. One reason many fans of slow-mo training are in their golden years. The workout is typically done using MedX equipment, weight machines that are developed in the 1980s for rehabilitative purposes. They're still used in physical therapy clinics, hospitals, and gyms around the country. Recently, strength training has become a hot topic in the world of exercise, in part because research continues to show its benefits for health and longevity. It builds muscle strength and bone density and is good for cardiometabolic health, especially for women. But slow-motion strength training in particular is beneficial for older exercisers, people healing injuries, or those who are new to or returning to exercise because the slow cadence and focus on form, always with one-on-one supervision, reduces the chance of injury. The method has also caught the attention of the wider exercise community because of its efficiency. A slow-motion workout is just 20 minutes long once a week. It shouldn't be done more than that, so the body has time to recover, says Melinda Hughes, co-owner of the Strength Shop. Slowing down the movement, eliminating momentum, and not stopping to rest during an exercise set puts the muscle under greater tension for a longer period of time, forcing it to work harder so exercisers may see greater benefit in less time compared with traditional strength training. Muscles typically fatigue from the exercise in just 1 to 2 minutes. Quote, "whereas traditional strength training takes three times the amount of time with more reps and sets," end quote, Hughes said. Quote, "and you don't get to the level of intensity that you do with slow-motion strength training where you just do one set to failure," end quote. Quote, "it's only 20 minutes. I can go on my lunch break," end quote, says Lei San Ho, a 33-year-old TV editor. She started slow-motion strength training at the Workout Revolution in Studio City after tearing her ACL in 2022. It provided a low-impact way to exercise while recovering, but she stuck with it to stay fit. Jason Zaremski, a sports medicine physician at the University of Florida, says the technique is, quote, "legit, the real thing," end quote. Quote, "any weight training is great for older individuals, but this routine reduces risk of injury while still gaining benefit," end quote, he says. Quote, "there's no jerky motions or throwing of weights, and it can increase your circulation. You get greater blood flow while activating your muscles. So you're adding a cardiovascular benefit for something that's basically anaerobic," end quote. Even so, other experts are skeptical about the technique. Quote, sets going to failure with a long time under tension is a very uncomfortable, unnecessarily painful workout, end quote. Casey Johnston, author of the weightlifting newsletter, quote, she's a beast, end quote, said. Quote, it's not necessarily more effective. So much of lifting is about coordination, neuromuscular activity in your body, and stabilization, and that's not present using machines the way it is with free weights, end quote. At Super Slow LA in Brentwood, which opened 25 years ago, the clientele ranges from age 15 to 89, but the studio specializes in the health of postmenopausal women who make up 80% of its business. 90% of its clients are female. Quote, women get osteoporosis and osteopenia and other related health issues because of hormonal changes, end quote, says owner Benjamin Fisher. Quote, a lot of our clients are afraid of walking down the street and breaking a hip. The methodology of what we do, we keep bone loss at bay. We give them the strength to be more active and independent, end quote. Leona Katz, an 80-year-old attorney who has been training at Super Slow LA for 5 years, calls the results, quote, miraculous, end quote. Quote, I was very overweight and had hip problems and blood pressure problems, end quote, Katz says. Quote, after my husband passed away, I made some life changes and lost more than 100 pounds. My kids call me Leona 2.0, end quote. At Myogenics Fitness, which opened in West Hollywood in 1998, the atmosphere is clean, simple, and functional. Occasionally, the studio will play white noise to help exercisers focus. Trainers coach clients on how to keep their breathing open and fluid while they lift. Quote, a lot of people compare it to meditating, end quote, owner Chad Morris says of the workout. Marty Waldman, 96, has been training at Myogenics for about 6 years, which has been, quote, very gratifying but also exhausting, end quote, as a nonagenarian, he says. He was a runner, skier, and long-distance biker when he was younger and is in relatively good shape today, but for a heart condition and, quote, two bad knees and shoulders, end quote. But the retired businessman began slow-mo strength training because he wanted to feel stronger. Quote, it's allowed me to do things I wouldn't ordinarily do, end quote, he says. Quote, we just got back from a rigorous trip with the gorillas in Rwanda. There's no way I could have done that if I hadn't been in reasonably decent shape, end quote. Though slow-motion strength training has delivered clear results for many of its participants, those results come with a price. Sessions must be done with a trainer and typically cost between $80 and $100. So that's a month's worth of sessions are more than a monthly gym membership. There are safety precautions, too. Quote, you can't do the same amount of weight that you do with a traditional routine, end quote, says sports medicine physician Sorensky. Quote, you may have to drop the weight because your muscles will fatigue quicker. They're under tension for a longer period. Your form also needs to be especially accurate, end quote. Still, devotees say the cost is worth it. Quote, you cannot put a price on health, end quote, says Blake Boyd, a 58-year-old actor, producer, and former fitness trainer who came to the strength shop 6 years ago after having been diagnosed with arthritis in his neck. Quote, it's effective, it works, I'll do it for the rest of my life, end quote. Pharmacies are yanking cold medicines from shelves. So what are the options now? Feeling stuffy and ready to reach for NyQuil, Benadryl, or Sudafed PE? Not so fast. The Food and Drug Administration has proposed ending the use of oral phenylephrine, a common ingredient found in many cold and allergy medicines, and some pharmacies already are yanking the popular products off shelves. Florida researchers have been studying the effectiveness of oral phenylephrine for 2 decades. As far back as 2005, researchers at the University of Florida College of Pharmacy had suspected that this ingredient doesn't relieve nasal congestion, even though it has been widely used for that purpose. The researchers evaluated multiple studies done on oral phenylephrine and combined them into a meta-analysis. They concluded that medications with the ingredient work no better than placebo pills in patients with cold and allergy congestion. Quote, for 20 years, we have been telling everyone who will listen that oral phenylephrine doesn't work, end quote, said Dr. Randy Hatton, a University of Florida College of Pharmacy professor. Quote, we have been teaching pharmacy students that it doesn't work. We hear from pharmacists who know it doesn't work, and we actually did something about it, end quote. Hatton and UF professors Dr. Leslie Hendelis took their findings to the FDA more than once. Finally, in September 2023, the federal agency convened a committee and issued a proposed order. Quote, they looked at all the evidence we looked at and did an in-depth evaluation of what we had been looking at for years, end quote, Hatton said. The FDA is allowing the public to comment for the next 6 months before it decides whether to pull medications with oral phenylephrine from shelves. But some retail pharmacies aren't waiting. CVS stopped selling products with phenylephrine last year. Other major pharmacies, including Walgreens and Rite Aid, still stock products containing the drug, but say they are monitoring the FDA's actions. So, what are some options for people suffering from congestion without their go-to medicines? Hatton said nasal sprays with phenylephrine are an option. Quote, in spray form, phenylephrine causes nasal constriction and opens up passages, end quote, he said. Quote, but only use the sprays for 3 to 5 days. People who keep taking them get rebound congestion, end quote. Doctors and pharmacists also recommend other options. Intranasal steroids like Flonase and Nasonex, or over-the-counter nasal sprays, with oxymetazoline, such as Afrin and Zicam. Saline irrigation devices like a neti pot that helps wash sinuses out, but only use distilled water, not tap. Nasal saline sprays like Sinex or Simply Saline, which also use a saltwater solution to irrigate sinuses. Products with pseudoephedrine, the ingredient in Sudafed, which can be found behind the pharmacy counter. Oral antihistamines like Zyrtec, Allegra, and Claritin, which clear nasal congestion associated with allergies. Quote, if you have questions, talk to the pharmacists. They are trained in non-prescription drugs. Just ask, does this work for congestion? End quote, Hatton advises. Those seeking non-medication options may try spicy foods, which can create a burning sensation from a chemical called capsaicin, causing a runny nose that drains mucus from sinuses. Steam from a hot shower or a warm compress over the nose. Humidifiers. This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, November 13th, 2024. Research. Long COVID study could be a game changer. AI can identify hidden cases from health records. Boston. A new long COVID study could be a, quote, game changer, end quote. According to local researchers who found that an AI tool can identify hidden cases of the mysterious condition from patient health records. While some diagnostic studies suggest that about 7% of the population suffers from long COVID, this new approach from Mass General Brigham researchers revealed a much higher 22.8% of the population. The Mass General Brigham scientists developed the AI algorithm to sift through electronic health records to help clinicians identify cases of long COVID, an often mysterious condition that can be debilitating and lead to chronic fatigue, cough, and brain fog. The study could help identify more people who should be receiving care for long COVID, according to the researchers, who said the greater 22.8% figure may align more closely with national trends and paint a more realistic picture of the pandemic's long-term toll. Quote, our AI tool could turn a foggy diagnostic process into something sharp and focused, giving clinicians the power to make sense of a challenging condition, end quote, said senior author Hossein Estiri, head of AI research at the Center for AI and Biomedical Informatics of the Learning Healthcare System at Mass General Brigham. Quote, with this work, we may finally be able to see long COVID for what it truly is, and more importantly, how to treat it, end quote, added Estiri, who's also an associate professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. The algorithm used in the AI tool was developed by drawing patient data from the clinical records of nearly 300,000 patients across 14 hospitals and 20 community health centers in the Mass General Brigham system. The AI uses a novel method developed by Estiri and colleagues called, quote, precision phenotyping, end quote, which sifts through individual records to identify symptoms and conditions linked to COVID, and to track symptoms over time in order to differentiate them from other illnesses. For instance, the algorithm can detect if shortness of breath may be the result of pre-existing conditions like heart failure or asthma, rather than long COVID. Only when every other possibility was exhausted would the tool flag the patient as having long COVID. Quote, physicians are often faced with having to wade through a tangled web of symptoms and medical histories, unsure of which threads to pull while balancing busy caseloads, end quote, said Alayla Azir, the co-lead author who's an internal medicine resident at Brigham Women's Hospital. Quote, having a tool powered by AI that can methodically do it for them could be a game changer, end quote. The patient-centered diagnoses may also help alleviate biases built into current diagnostics for long COVID, according to the researchers. Their study showed that the individuals they identified as having long COVID mirror the broader demographic makeup of Massachusetts. Unlike long COVID algorithms that rely on a single diagnostic code or individual clinical encounters, skewing results towards certain populations such as those with more access to care. Quote, this broader scope ensures that marginalized communities often sidelined in clinical studies are no longer invisible, end quote, said Istiri. Future studies may explore the algorithm in cohorts of patients with specific conditions like COPD or diabetes. The researchers also plan to release this algorithm publicly on open access, where physicians and healthcare systems globally can use it in their patient populations. In addition to opening the door to better clinical care, this work may lay the foundation for future research into the genetic and biochemical factors behind long COVID's various subtypes. Istiri said, quote, questions about the true burden of long COVID, questions that have thus far remained elusive, now seem more within reach, end quote.
Natural gas output rises in Bakken, Eagle Ford, Permian basins. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Three of the nation's oiliest producing basins have also been producing a rising share of the nation's natural gas over the last decade, according to the Energy Information Administration. A recent report from the EIA found natural gas comprised 40% of total production from the Bakken, the Eagle Ford, and the Permian, compared with 29% in 2014. In the Permian, the share of natural gas produced relative to crude oil has remained relatively stable, although the gas-to-oil ratio, or GOR, has steadily risen from 3.1 MCF per barrel, or 34% of total production in 2014, to 4 MCF per barrel, or 40% in 2024. Natural gas production in the Permian, the largest producing tight oil play in the United States, increased eightfold in 2024 through September compared with 2014, and crude oil production increased sixfold. In the Eagle Ford play, the share of natural gas produced relative to crude oil has remained the highest among these plays, increasing from 3.5 MCF per barrel, or 37% of total production, to 5.6 MCF per barrel, or 48%. This increased GOR reflects a 14% increase in average natural gas production and a 28% decrease in average crude oil production in 2024 through September compared with 2014. In the Bakken play, the share of natural gas produced relative to crude oil has historically been relatively low, averaging only 1.2 MCF per barrel, or 16% of total production in 2014. However, the GOR increased to 2.9 MCF per barrel, or 33% in 2024, with average gross natural gas production increasing 186% compared with 2014, while crude oil production increased just 14%. Production of associated natural gas, which is natural gas produced from predominantly oil wells, has increased more rapidly from these tight oil plays. Natural gas production from these plays more than tripled with an increase of 22 billion cubic feet per day over the period, compared with crude oil output, which more than doubled with an increase of 4 million barrels per day. U.S. energy exports soar 50 years post-1973 oil embargo. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. It's been just over 50 years since the 1973 oil embargo disrupted the nation's energy supplies, sending energy prices soaring and creating long lines at gas pumps as drivers sought increasingly scarce gasoline. In the aftermath of that embargo, the Federal Energy Administration, predecessor to the Department of Energy, began publishing monthly overview of energy produced and consumed in the U.S. The most recent publication from the DOE's Energy Information Administration provides a snapshot of just how much has changed over the last 50 years. In 1974, the country consumed more energy than it produced and was a net importer of energy from other states. Today, the U.S. is the world's largest crude oil and natural gas producer. The U.S. also became a net energy exporter starting in 2019. In 1974, U.S. net energy imports in the first 7 months were about 6.8 quadrillion British thermal units. During the first 7 months of 2024, the U.S. exported a net total of about 5 quads. This has been driven by crude oil and petroleum products and liquefied natural gas over the last 15 years. Thanks to technological improvements, including horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing, total U.S. energy production in the first 7 months of 2024 was 68% or 24 quads more than the same time frame in 1974. The EIA also noted U.S. energy consumption has steadily increased since 1974, though at a lower rate than production growth. Between January and July 2024, U.S. energy consumption was 32% or 13.2 quads more than the same period in 1974. Consumption growth is due to several factors, including population growth and increased economic activity. However, primary energy consumption has generally decreased on both a per capita basis and in terms of energy consumed per dollar of gross domestic product since the 1970s. Increased energy efficiency has contributed to these decreases. DOE loan lets Long Path expand monitoring network. The story was written by Miller McEwen, oil editor. Long Path Technologies will be accelerating growth of its nationwide methane emissions monitoring network thanks to support from the U.S. Department of Energy. The DOE's Loan Programs Office has finalized a $162 million loan to the Denver-based company. Quote, "This has supercharged our build-out," President and CEO Ian Dickinson told the Reporter-Telegram. He said the company has operations across 7 producing basins, but the core of its coverage is in the Permian Basin, working extensively in the Midland and Delaware basins. He estimated Longpath works with 24 Permian Basin operators and has a field office in Odessa. "This capital infusion," quote, "gives us the opportunity and partnership with operators to expand our coverage. The scope of this capital gives us the flexibility to do that," end quote. Dickinson said the company intends to work with its customers to develop a strategy in building out its coverage. He said the desired scope is coverage of the entire domestic U.S., including Alaska. Beyond oil and gas, he said he hopes to sign up landfills and mining operations, among other industries. "One tower covers 20 square kilometers and," quote, "it's rare we don't see more than one operator within that purview. It's almost like a cell phone tower," end quote. He envisions having one anchor customer in each basin, and as it builds out coverage, the company can incorporate other businesses seen from those towers. "Permian Basin customers are looking for 3 things," Dickinson continued: "to ensure compliance with state and federal regulatory frameworks, to ensure coverage against third-party flyovers and exposure to waste emissions." He explained that most emissions leaks are intermittent and a flyover can't tell if the leak is intermittent or persistent, and Longpath can help differentiate between the two, helping prevent reputations damage. returns that help the operator keep natural gas in the pipeline for sale. Quote, methane is not a byproduct, it is the actual product. Operators can get a great return on their investment by fixing leaks, he said. Dickinson noted that the funding does not come from the DOE. Rather, the DOE guarantees the loan, which does have to be paid back. He said it is a 5-year program, and Longpath intends to build out a network of laser-based methane sensing nodes covering 24,000 square miles and tens of thousands of facilities, many in the Permian Basin. Other facilities are scheduled for California, Colorado, North Dakota, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, Utah, and Wyoming. Build-out is already underway, he said. Quote, it's scalable. We could cover the entire Permian Basin for less than the cost of the last James Bond movie, he said. He called the loan an inflection point in efforts to tackle the methane emissions challenge, quote, and doing so in a way that's scalable, cost-effective, and compliant. This is about efficient, sustainable operations. Operators are passionate and serious about running the best operations, safer operations, end quote. The network is expected to prevent methane emissions equivalent to at least 6 million metric tons of carbon dioxide annually, the equivalent of taking 1.3 million gasoline-powered vehicles off the road, by enabling subscribers to identify and respond to methane leaks quickly. At its peak, the project will create 35 construction jobs and 266 operational jobs. Spicewood Mineral makes 5 acquisitions in Permian. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Spicewood Mineral Partners has invested in Permian Basin Minerals since its inception in 2019. The Dallas-based company recently updated Tier 1 mineral assets in the Permian. Deal 1. Strategic acquisition of early life, 90% undeveloped mineral tract in the Delaware Basin, offering the potential for significant upside through resource development and timing advantages. Recent activity includes Occidental filing a lease in the neighboring section and several operators farming in nearby to accelerate timing and reserves. Deal 2. Higher yielding asset with mineral interest in the Delaware and Midland basins, operated by Occidental and High Peak. The deal includes both production-ready assets and significant future development opportunities. Approximately 60% of the inventory remains, featuring a mix of sub-$40 per barrel opportunities and longer-term potential. Deal 3. Mineral interests in Ward County, considered to have strong production potential, supported by proximity to key operators like ConocoPhillips and Occidental. Deal 4. Mineral interest in northern Reeves County, associated with BP. This unit is one of BP's last remaining long lateral developments in the core of the basin, indicating significant near-term development focus. Deal 5. Mineral interest across the Delaware Basin with strong near-term cash flow and future development potential. Only 18% of the asset is PDP, that is, proved, developed, producing, with the majority of inventory having break-evens below $35 per barrel. Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, November 2nd. Upstream M&A slows to $12 billion in quarter three, lowest since early 2023. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. There was no surprise for Enverus intelligence research analysts as they put together the company's third quarter upstream mergers and acquisitions summary. The summary found a significantly slower pace of deals, with just $12 billion in announced deals, the lowest total since the first quarter of 2023. That decline was largely attributable to a pause in public company consolidation, as well as fewer deals to be had in the prolific Permian Basin, according to EIR. Quote, upstream M&A was bound to drop after the unprecedented lift of corporate mergers and private equity exits since 2023. Those deals raised asset prices and cut the number of potential targets, said Andrew Dittmar, principal analyst at EIR. Continuing the quote, an additional factor could have been increased volatility in crude prices during the third quarter. Anytime commodities get more volatile, oil and gas deals are harder to negotiate. However, that is a short-term turbulence until buyers and sellers feel more confident on the direction oil prices are moving, end quote. Dittmar said the most notable shift in the quarter was the lack of consolidation between publicly traded exploration and production companies, the first time that has happened in a quarter since 2022. The $188 billion in public company consolidation since the start of 2023, with 11 public deals over $2 billion, leaves significantly fewer targets to pursue. In addition, large buyers like Chevron, ConocoPhillips, Diamondback Energy, and ExxonMobil have been busy closing and integrating deals, with timelines often delayed by extra antitrust scrutiny by the Federal Trade Commission. Dittmar told the Reporter Telegram that he sees primarily non-core asset sales in the near term, as buyers pay down debt from a round of major consolidation and trim non-competitive assets. Quote, we are certainly seeing that in the Permian already with the APA and Occidental sales and rumored divestment packages from ExxonMobil and ConocoPhillips, he said. He also predicted the market would see some acquisitions as companies look to be opportunistic in adding high-quality inventory, even in small chunks, when it is available, but being willing to target middle-quality inventory as well that they might not have bid on a few years ago. Quote, quality is also relative between operators. Something that would be considered low quality by a company like Diamondback would still be competitive for development by a company like Vital that lacks their depth of inventory, Dittmar added. He continued, quote, while public company non-core sales are the biggest driver of M&A going forward, we can't overlook the handful of significant remaining privates in the Permian, like Franklin Mountain and Double Eagle. Those give public companies one last shot at buying a significant chunk of higher quality inventory and are likely to command significant premiums in the market, end quote. Dittmar also expects a greater focus on opportunities outside the Permian Basin, where there are more opportunities and pricing for undeveloped inventory is more reasonable. Quote, companies have definitely broadened the search beyond the Permian to find assets. I think the Eagle Ford and Williston are likely the top targets for bigger operators, he said, even though both basins are much more developed than the Permian, especially in the core, they still have substantial remaining inventory in Tier 2, and three areas and refracts are breathing new life back into the core, end quote. Public operators trust those plays because of scale and repeatability of drilling results. For the small publics, companies like Mach and Sandridge, plus privates, they are going to look further out for assets, including areas like the Western Anadarko Basin and legacy Rockies plays like the San Juan, he added. Quote, there is still a significant amount of oil and gas to develop outside the main shale plays focused on by bigger public companies, Dittmar said. Now that the big shale plays are increasingly consolidated, the industry is dusting off maps and rediscovering areas that have been under the radar for the last decade, end quote.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.